Good evening, race fans. I am Trish England, and welcome to Race Talk with Trish, produced by Dave Wallen and the Racing History Project. Guess what? All our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them forever on the Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com, and also on the Internet Archive, archive.org. We've got a great and unique event tonight, all about SRO America, also known as GT World Challenge America, and the growing U.S. series that has joined the wildly successful international racing sanctioning body with events all over the world. Since 1990, it has evolved from a branch of the SCCA called World Challenge up to Pirelli World Challenge with a GTA class similar to the FIA bronze category. New classes were added, among them GT for Porsches and the ever-popular Sprint X class. With the introduction of the new owner, the Stefan Rattel organization, and sanctioning by USAC, SRO has become the largest GT racing group in the world. The series consists of four driver classifications and five classes of vehicles, GT3, GT4, which is Sprint, Sprint X, East and West, and the touring car, consisting of TCR homologated cars such as separate TC and TCA classes, featuring modified production vehicles such as BMWs and Mazda MX-5s cup cars. And to tell us about it is racing champ and GT series director Jack Baldwin, along with GT4 champ Kevin Conway and Kenton Koch. And if we're lucky, maybe a few more. So, audience, please mute your phones, and we'll start it out with Jack Baldwin. Good evening, Jack. Thanks for being here.
Well, it's a pleasure, Trish. Thank you very much. It's nice for you to have us on the show tonight. We're always glad to be here. I'm especially happy to be here with two of, you know, the best drivers and the best guys in our paddock, or in anybody's paddock, Kenton and Ken Cock and Kevin Conway, both of them champions and both of them just top professional drivers and guys.
Oh, sorry if I got some names wrong there, y'all. I'm sorry. Jack.
Yeah.
How did you make the change over to SRO and when?
Well, making the change to SRO, in the end of my career, I had a race team, GT Sport Racing, and I developed the Cayman platform, which is known now as the Club Sport, and it's gone on. It's in its fourth generation of cars. But in those years, I helped make all that happen. And I was sort of the father of that platform to get that going. So when that program ended, it was a very successful program. It ended. We sold the team, and at that point, the entire industry was changing to an homologated situation, to a world, sort of a world class where the cars are homologated and manufacturers are building the race cars. And at that point, I spoke to Greg Hill, who I knew from before, and about, you know, taking over and managing the GT4 class specifically. And
Greg Gill is the president and CEO of SRO America. Okay.
Absolutely. And that's where it all started. So I took over at that point, and, and we started down that road. And GT4, you know, GT4 has become really a big class, a very competitive class. I feel like the Pirelli GT4 America Series has the best racing in the United States right now. It's the best platform for professionals and amateurs. Amateurs meaning the gentleman driver, the customer racer who aspires to be race at a professional level. GT4 America is really the place to be. And if you are successful there and win there, run up front there, you've done something. It's not easy. All of our races are pretty darn good, and we have big fields, anywhere between, you know, in the mid to high 30s to 40 cars sometimes.
Whoa, per class.
Yeah. Well, and over three classes. We have three classes that makes up the 40, 35, say, let's just call it 30 fields.
The entire field, so gotcha.
Half the field's made up of the most popular class, which is Pro-Am. A pro, and which would be a silver, or gold or silver rated driver, an FIA rated driver, along with a bronze rated driver. And that's Pro-Am. Then we have, that's the most popular class. That usually makes up about half the field. And then we have silver, which are two golds or two silver drivers. And then bronze is two bronze drivers. And that's the three classes.
And these are per FIA specifications?
Yeah, it's all per FIA specifications. We work off a global BOP, balance of performance, and that's how it works. And it works pretty darn well, actually, race in and race out. Interestingly enough, Stefan Ertel, SRO, Stefan actually owns the name GT3 and GT4. He owns that name, those names. He was the beginning. He started that whole thing. So when other series use that name, they are licensed. They are licensed to use it by the farm. Also, his BOP, his international BOP, is used, and it licenses it to everyone around the world, including IMSA. They use it as a baseline and then go from there. So, we pretty much got, you know, our fingers in a lot of different places and a lot of big races, Bathurst, Spa, you know, to name a couple. Stefan, those are Stefan's races. And he has many series across the globe. So
Are any of your friends at Bathurst right now?
Excuse me?
Are any of your friends at Bathurst right now?
I'm not sure who's running Bathurst from our – somebody is. I'm sure somebody is, but I'm not sure who. I don't think any of my GT4 guys are. I'd know about it. But we've had drivers run over there. And
we get really excited about it.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd like to really talk more about, you know, I'll let Kevin and Kenton to talk more about what they do. And they have two great race teams, and they're our front-running guys. So I'd like to turn it over to one of them. You decide, Trish, and we'll go from there.
Okay, you choose who wants to go.
All right, Kenton.
Oh, I don't mind. Kenton just got back from Bahrain, so that he's got a lot to talk about.
Oh, how'd you do?
Oh, man. Yeah, you guys can't put me on a spot like this.
Uh-oh, I didn't mean
no,
to.
No.
That is my job, man.
Yeah, no, you're doing your job great. No, I've been in motorsports for a long time, ever since I was 8 years old. I kind of got into go-karts and then came into cars through Skip Barber, and I kind of went through the ladder system with Mazda through their MX-5 Cup and IMSA Lights, and kind of up through the ladder up to IMSA and whatnot. And then, you know, as my career has taken its path, it's ended up here in SRO, and it's been a good home for the last couple of years. So I make a living coaching and driving as well. So it's the people that I coach, you know, there's a desire for them to kind of come to SRO, and it's a good platform for everyone to get out and go race, and for, you know, relatively affordable costs. And it's just a hoot to race with 35 cars on the track at one point. So, we raced in the GT4 Sprintex. It's a customer racing. So it's Brian Putt is the customer that I work with, and his His company is Aires, AIRES, and it's a relocation business for international and domestic companies who need help relocating employees. So he his company essentially does all that for people. So, and I mean, I have a couple of personal sponsors, but it's yeah, Justice Brothers is one of them. And yeah, they do some chemical stuff or brake clean things of that nature. But yeah, it's been good. So SRO's has been awesome. It's been fun, that's for sure, and whatnot. But yeah, it's been a new role for myself. You know, I came from being a driver coach. And then, you know, this at the beginning of last year, or end of 2019, just before the pandemic hit, Brian Putt, the client that I work with, he's like, you know, I'm tired of running with other teams. I want to make my own team. So he put me in a position to basically build a program for him from the ground up and whatnot. So I've never thought I would know as much as I do about semi-trucks. if you had told me at 16, 17 years old that I would know what a Kenworth T680 is with a Cummins ISX motor, I would have told you you're crazy. So, yeah, it's been a heck of a learning experience. Yeah, it's been a heck of a learning experience, learning how to operate a team and manage it and whatnot. And I do that with the help of my wife because I can't do all of it myself and drive. So she's a big role in managing the program, and we've had pretty good success this year. So it's been really rewarding.
How'd you finish?
We got second this year in the championship. So in Pro-Am, we got second. So we won our first race, and we raced an Aston, and we were the only Aston to win overall. So it was pretty cool to kind of check that one off the list for this year for Aston. So it was I can't complain. So yeah, the BOP is pretty good.
It sounds like it's working for you very well, and that is a marvelous car, and they definitely know how to build a race car.
I can't complain. Yeah, it's pretty good.
So next season.
Yeah, it's always good to race. Yeah.
Next season.
Go ahead.
Let's see what I've got here. Looks like it's a pretty full season. How many races do you aspire to per season? Right now we've got, what, 7, 8? And coming from. And
yeah, we got
considering
seven
last year was so messed up, you know, I'm sure you had some events shuffled around like everybody else did.
It was an interesting year last year, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a sad year last year, quite frankly. I see that you're going to do the Ozarks. Has anybody in your group tested there, or do you plan to anytime? What do you think about that track?
Well, I've been.
Are you guys planning to go test?
Yeah. We actually. This is Kevin, and you know, after hearing about the track from multiple people and Jack included, it's certainly on our list to go test and check out the new facility. And I think anytime you know, somebody, a family goes and makes the investment that the Pessics have to create a new facility, it's really encouraging for motorsports as a whole. It's always fun to go to a new facility, and especially if it lives up to you know, as wild as it appears and seems from, you know, some of the YouTube videos we've seen and some of the things that we've heard. Really looking forward to that, and I think it's really cool to see a new circuit come out that has a lot of old school vibes, that still has, you know, some of the safety and things as tracks have evolved. So when you can still have the, as we call it sometimes, the big boy or big girl corners and sections of the racetrack that you still know have some of the updated safety features of a more modern facility, it's kind of the best of both worlds. So really excited to get out there and turn some laps. We're certainly going to go test and try to learn as much as we can. And again, I think it's great for the SRO to be the first professional series to showcase Ozarks, and, you know, to be able to go there and And for this series to go there, it just shows that SRO continues to lead in the areas of road racing in North America.
It is squirrely to the max, don't you think?
It appears that. It
a lot of blind hills and curves.
Yeah, and I can't wait. Mossport's one of my favorite circuits, so you know, I love that aspect of it, and it's certainly it's unique and different from a lot of the more modern European style tracks that you know, there's a couple new ones obviously in the U.S., but even when you go race in Europe, the tracks are so different there that it's nice to have that old school high commitment corners and sections that have big consequence. And I'm saying that now, and you know, if we have a bad moment, I might hate that place, but looking forward to going there and learning that track.
Well, you make me looking forward to it more than I thought. Do you have TV coverage?
Yes, GT4 America does have live stream, which is great because if you go to GT World on YouTube, they get thousands and thousands of viewers every race. The live stream has great coverage and great commentary, not just from the commentators that are actually calling the race, but if you look at some of the comments from all of the spectators as well, it's a very engaged and it's a very passionate viewership that's always fun to watch. And then it's also tape delayed on CBS Sports as well.
Oh, that's neat. I didn't know that. I should have checked on that before I started this program tonight. Sorry about that, but I'm glad you clarified that for me. Wonderful. What tracks of these do you like best?
Kenton, you want to take that one?
Pay attention, kiddo. The races coming up in 2022, which are your favorite tracks?
Oh, man. I always say VIR because we got our first podium there, and then we got our first win there. So things just always are good there. So fingers crossed they continue to be good. But, yeah, Ozarks is an interesting one. It's going to be the question mark on everyone's calendar for what to expect. Because it is such a unique track.
Bring
you know,
lots
I,
of
like,
spare parts.
Oh, no, I don't. I don't want to think about that. Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
Just looking out for your interest, my dear.
Yeah, no, thankfully we have a support truck that comes and brings all those for us. So, the reason it's just going to be a question mark on everyone's list is because it's almost like a Nürburgring of North America. There's so many unique types of corners on the track. As Kevin was saying, you know, there's, you know, little room for error and fast corners and blind crests and blind entries and, you know, the
raceability
will be. It looks narrow just because of how fast it is, and I think how close the walls are. I think the asphalt is actually not that narrow.
Okay.
But when you're flying down the middle of the road, but it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But yeah, VIR is always top of the list for us.
It's not narrow. It looks narrow, but honestly, it's not narrow at all. In fact, it's actually pretty wide, very wide. And in some of the corners, he's got 80 foot, it's 80 feet wide in some of the corners. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
There again, he's right. The speed at which they're in the video that the car is going around does make it seem more narrow than it is. And that must be it because...
That was
hair-raising watching that.
I mean, it's going to be the greatest track in this country because it's got so many elements that no other tracks have. It'd be like taking all the great corners or many of the great corners from the tracks that we have and put them all at one place and then adding a rouge to it from Spa.
Well, they tried that with Coda, and I don't think it was quite as effective.
Yeah, Coda's... You know, Coda is Coda.
Coda is Coda. You're right.
So, you know. But one more thing I wanted to throw in here, Trish, that we talked on a minute ago was we have 7 events, but each one of our events has 2 races. So it's actually a 14-race season.
Right.
So we have 2 races in each on each weekend, which makes it a lot more cost-effective. And you got 2 shots at it. So I think that's good for the customer. They like that, you know. So
yeah,
anyway.
It's definitely a good way of getting the seat time without having to incorporate a live pit stop, you know, because the cars can only do, you know, about 65 minutes on a full tank of fuel. So they make the race an hour long so that, you know, when you come in and do your driver change, you don't have to change tires. You don't have to add fuel. You just do your driver change, which is at a timed stop. So you have to be in pit lane for a minimum time of, you know, typically 86 to 91 seconds in pit lane from pit in to pit out. So your driver change has to be, you know, quite quick in order to even make sure you can meet the minimum and not go below it. You can go over it, but you have to be in the pit lane for that period of time. So since you don't have to do tires or fuel, you don't have to have as many crew members that aren't being useful doing things throughout the weekend. You know, so it's the excess is not something that you need to worry about. You just have the amount of guys you need to work on the car, and you don't need a fuel guy. You don't need a dead man guy holding the valve open. You don't need a fire extinguisher guy, you know. So it's like you save yourself a lot of costs in that aspect. And having the sprint type format, you know, makes the racing, you know, you're never holding back. You're flat out the whole time, always. So it makes it fun, that's for sure.
And isn't that all the classes, or is that the sprint classes?
Jack can clarify on that one, yeah.
Not all the classes, excuse me, say that again.
The two race format, is that with all the classes or just the sprint classes?
Well, it's Sprint X, called Sprint X. So
okay.
It's a Sprint X is a two driver format, right? 60 minute race, 2 drivers. And so race 1 and race 2. And the thing that makes it really good, especially for the customer and the Pro 2, is that race 1, we have 2 qualifying sessions, so both drivers have to qualify. Both drivers qualify. Driver 1, and we have a driver nomination, so you nominate driver 1, driver 2. We have rules surrounding that. But basically, you have driver 1, driver 2. Driver 1 starts race 1. Driver 2 starts race 2. So one driver starts, the other driver finishes, and vice versa. So what is good is when you're running, especially in a pro-am situation, the ams, you know, the bronzes run against the bronzes. And the pros run against the pros. So the bronze drivers can go out and actually compete amongst themselves with like and kind. They don't have to go, and a bronze guy doesn't have to go up against Kenton or Kevin. They go up against guys that are they're bronze guys, you know.
Right.
So well, I know Kevin's
I am a bronze though, Jack.
I know Kevin's a bronze, but a fast bronze.
Kevin's okay. Not a bronze.
Yeah, I got it. And the thing is, Kevin and John Giesbright, they run in they won the championship and in bronze, in the bronze category, right? So in their case, they're both bronze. So driver 1, driver 2, they can be either driver. Typically the faster driver is driver 2. But in the case of a pro-am situation, Kenton will always be driver 2, and Brian Tutt will always be driver 1. So it makes it really good for the customer racer, you know, the gentleman drivers. It makes it real good for those guys. And a lot of the guys ask me, they say, when will I know I'm ready to move and try something, you know, move up? And I go, when you can run at the front of the field. when you can win, you know, your bronze when you're part of the race. You know, when you can put the car up front and, you know, consistently, then you're ready to maybe think about going to the next step. So it's a great learning. It's a great learning format. Really good. It really works well. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jackie, you bring up a great. Sorry, go ahead, Trish.
Say you're having a front vibration and you know it's your front tire. Can you come in and change tires?
You can.
Okay.
You can.
I know that's a stupid question.
You can change a tire, and you can even change a tire during a pit stop if you want. We have a Joker rule. We have a rule. And you could even change tires even if you want to change tires. You can change tires.
Okay.
It's not recommended because it you don't really have time to get it done. But
right.
If you need to change a tire, you can change a tire. And if you need to change one tire, you could probably change one tire and get back out as anything, no problem, you know? So you just can't add – the one thing you can't do is you cannot add fuel. But you don't need to add fuel, you know? So, you know, that's –
Yeah, and,
so
and
the element,
Chris, you know, Jack –
go ahead. Go.
Go ahead, Jack. No, I was just going to say, you brought up a really, really good point, Jack, when you're talking about the classes and – You know, for us, one of the unique things is my co-driver this year, John Jesbray, he had only run about six MX5 Cup races the year before, and that was his entire experience level. He was a kid that has come up. He's 18 years old. He wasn't able to come up through karting or come up through the ladder system that I did myself and like Kenton did and a lot of others. So he just started racing, and his first foray into racing was MX5 Cup, which is a big bite of the apple. And then, you know, we immediately put him to GT4 in the Sprint X category in the AM classification, which is another huge, huge step. But the cool thing about SRO and GT4 America is that you have people using it from a driver development standpoint to get to the next level in their career. And then you also have gentlemen drivers that have a great place to race at a very, you know, high level, at a professional level. And because of the class structure, to be competitive, if they're bronze, they're able to compare themselves and compete against other bronzes. If they're fortunate enough to be paired up with somebody like Kenton, who's very, very fast, then they can go and run for Pro-Am and run overall for results. And, you know, I can tell you, I think pretty much every race this year, I saw Kenton's back bumper, and I never got fortunate enough to get to his back bumper. It was because he was always driving away from me. But, you know, this year was our first year in SRO, and we learned a lot. We were in the AM classification, and you know, we're using it from a driver development standpoint, where some people are using it to work with the guys that they coach or gentlemen drivers. And you know, from my background, I've raced in a lot of different series, and one of the coolest things for SRO is you see this camaraderie and you see this welcoming environment for guys that are true gentlemen drivers, guys that are professionals, guys that are old professionals like myself, and then you have guys that are just coming up like John Jesbray, my co-driver. So you get this great mix of guys that are trying to establish themselves, guys that are trying to maintain relevance to a degree, and then you have gentlemen drivers that are just starting their first foray into professional racing.
Fantastic.
You know, a little while back you were talking about, TV. You asked about TV and,
right.
And you know, our footprint that way, metrics. So our just to give you a coming down a list of our the 21 season metrics, we had total entries of 795 entries. We had total drivers involved 1,187. Event attendees. We had 170,000 total. This is across the season. Social impressions. This is worldwide. We had 668,405,000, you know, social impressions. Social engagements, 2.3 million. You know, live stream views, almost 5 million. Live stream impressions, 123 million. So it's a pretty big, network TV viewership, 1.8, almost 2 million, just short of 2 million. So, you know, it's got a pretty big footprint all in all, you know, SRO, because you can watch it all over the world, and they do. That's why we get these numbers. Anyway.
That is so neat.
Yeah, people, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what we don't have. We don't have the big events. We don't have the Rolex. We don't have the 12 hours of Sebring. But we have, we're trying to establish some big events, you know, like the 8 hours at Indy. That's been a very successful event, and things like that. So, and we run with IndyCar sometimes. It was a couple of times we ran with IndyCar this big. The Sprint side runs with IndyCar, and we have Sprint XS too, but right now only the Sprint side is doing it. But, you know, like Kevin was saying, I mean, it's a great, today's business model is customer racing. That is today's business model, across the board. And, you know, GT4 America, SRO America, really, is a great business model for the business that we're doing right now for customer racing. And it affords guys like Brian Putt and John Giesbright, which Kevin was explaining, to come into the sport and to, you know, to learn the trade and become, be able to race at a professional level and hone their skills. And in the case of, you know, Brian, he wants to win. In the case of John Giesbright, he wants to win. He's a young guy, so he's looking to maybe probably move to GT3. He'll go GT4 a couple of seasons, you know, get his experience, get, you know, get his racecraft down. And when it's time, he'll move to GT3. And we've had other drivers go TC, GT4, and GT3. And that's the way it works. Not everybody has to go to GT3. I argue that GT4 is a destination, and you know if you win in GT4, you've accomplished something. It's not easy. You can ask these guys. It is not easy. So when you've done it, you're proud of yourself because it was a lot of work and a lot of focus, a lot of concentration to get it done. And you know, we have if you look at the list of the pro drivers we have in the paddock, I mean, it's the same guys that are over at IMSA, pretty much in the GT side, you know, not so much in the prototypes. We don't have prototypes, but you know, because we're a GT racing.
Do you think you ever will?
Excuse me.
Think you ever will have prototypes?
Do we have? No,
you
there's
think
no.
You will have prototypes.
We won't. No, we won't do prototypes. We're not doing. We do GT. Our highest level is GT3, but. I'll tell you this. I've been to Spa twice, and I've been to a lot of other races too. But I'll tell you, there is nothing like going to Spa and seeing 75 GT3 cars take the green and run flat out for 24 hours. It's unbelievable.
Oh.
It's unbelievable. So that's pretty cool. All the manufacturers involved, all of them. So, anyway,
what was the winning the main championship car and team this year?
In
I know that's a dumb question.
In Pro Am, it was a Porsche one in Pro Am. And a Toyota run ran in bronze and silver.
Oh, go ahead, Jack.
I was just going to jump in.
This year, we were fortunate enough to run with the GR Super GT4 platform with the Toyota, and that was the first year for Toyota in North America, and we were able to have some success, win a few races, and get some podiums and walk away with the AM class championship with the GR Supra platform. And
it's been a great platform, and we were able to, you know, learn with that car, and it just shows the strength of SRO attracting manufacturers like Toyota that are fully committed to the program and offer, you know, support that's second to none to any other manufacturer for what they provide at the track through engineering and parts and support. So we were really excited to be able to bring that first championship to Toyota. And, you know, it was our first year as a team and our first year competing in SRO GT4 America. So a lot of firsts, a lot of things to learn as we went. And it's just, again, a great testament to the commitment that these manufacturers are making to the GT4 series. And that speaks to the strength of it globally.
That's impressive. I love it. It's not like any other series I've ever experienced, I can tell. Totally different. I love it. So how is it? Okay, on the track, having fun. Let's do some stories.
Guys, that's you guys.
Go ahead, Kevin. Tell you a lot of stories. Yeah, I can tell you a lot of stories of getting passed by Kenton. So since Kenton's on the call, maybe we talk about those. But I will say I think Kenton was up for drive of the year at Indy. I think he started last or somewhere near last. And then, you know, I was the second driver in. And next thing I know, I looked up my mirror and Kenton was there. And I'm like, didn't this guy just start last? But, you know, the cool thing about the GT4 America series is the level of competition, as Jack has already spoke to, is incredible. And anytime you have 35, 40 cars all within a couple seconds of each other, a few seconds of each other, you know, it's just a testament to the BOP that SRO does. And, hey, we don't always agree with it. I can tell you there's many times that Ken and I have actually had these conversations. We've been the slowest cars on the straightaways, but every car makes its speed in different areas. We might make that speed up through the corners or through braking or, you know, different things that, you know, BOP is frustrating anytime you have to manage all the different cars. I mean, you're looking at something like the Aston that Kenton races. That's a great car, but it's completely different than the Supra that I race in terms of weight, wheelbase, engine, the way the engine makes its power, the aero, you know, all of those things. So, for the SRO to be able to do the job that they've done to bring the cars as close together to make it competitive is remarkable, and that's why you see such big fields. That's why you see the series growing is because of that. And I'll tell you, I don't think you're ever, and Jack, you might disagree with me here, but I don't think you're ever going to find anybody that's actually happy about their BOP on any given week. But, you know, overall, it's an incredible place to – yeah, it's an incredible place to go race and compete. And, you know, I came out of the NASCAR world. I raced in the Cup Series. I raced in Xfinity Truck. I've raced in USAC and all these different series. And I can tell you some of the most fun that I've had you know, great wheel-to-wheel contact. Well, yeah, there's been some contact. But wheel-to-wheel racing and really good, a lot of respect among everybody has been something that I was really surprised about and pleasantly surprised, candidly. You know, I've raced in a lot of different series over the years, and, you know, the SRO has been certainly one of the most fun series, one of the most competitive series, and there's a high level of respect, which you can certainly appreciate, and I kind of give it a nod back to the old days where you're going to race the crap out of somebody, and if you have to move somebody to pass them, you're going to move them, but there's a way to move somebody with respect.
There must be.
I feel like, Kevin, I feel like you know more about how to do that than anyone. About how to move someone with respect. being in the NASCAR world, I bet that's like something that you do like every other corner. It's like you're either getting constantly moved or you're always constantly moving someone, but you're never dumping someone flat out. Like you're never actually like putting them off up into the wall or off the road or something like that. But if you do put them into the wall, you better hope you put them into the wall till we can't get back to you. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. But no, I had, I guess one story with Brian, that stood out to me this year was one, just like, you know, having put his blood, sweat, and tears into this program, you know, to finally get rewarded with a win. You know, him coming in, he was the one that finished the race and you know, won the race. So he came across the start-finish line, you know, in first place overall and in our class. And for me, like, it wasn't even the fact that, you know, we won the race. It was the fact that he got that opportunity to cross the finish line and bring it home in first place. And for him, like, the reaction that came out of him and the emotion that came from it was, like, just, like, on a whole nother level of, like, rewarding. To have worked with him for the last 5 years and you know, seen his improvements and whatnot, like, is probably more rewarding than winning a race yourself on your own. You know, so that was something quite amazing to see. And he's quite an exuberant and emotional guy. So he showed every bit of it when he came across the line, and he said things that might not ever need to be repeated on the radio. But he was I'll say the least, he was quite happy. I mean, everyone's got their stories about the times where, you know, they had a coming together with someone, and, you know, might not be most positive stories, but yeah, I think I'll probably save those ones for another time.
I don't know.
But yeah, it was.
So your teams are similar in size and scope, mechanics and crew people and structure as, say, an IMSA team.
We probably have less crew. And the reason for that is we don't have to do live pit stops, so we don't need as many people to do the pit stops. Yeah. So if you have one car, you know, you don't have as much crew on any given weekend. Typically, yeah, you don't need as many people there.
And one of the great things, this is Kevin, and one of the great things that, you know, Ken, to your point, is that's a huge part of why we chose to get involved in the SRO GT4 America, is because it helps contain costs from our standpoint, where we're trying to develop John and bring him up to speed in his professional career, where you have a two-driver format, where you can learn driver changes, you can learn pit stops, but you can contain costs. You can keep it more approachable and more realistic in a way, because you're not having to take those extra people, as Ken mentioned. You're not having to do those live pit stops, but you are still doing, when I say live pit stops, you're not doing the tire changes and adding fuel, which require a lot of extra equipment and people, and that just adds cost. So for us, you know, it was a great series for us to commit to, because we still get to make those pit stops, but without all of that added cost. And the cool thing is, as we mentioned earlier in the call, kind of where you have other series collaborating with the SRO to avoid date clashes, that helps the crew members to be able to make a living in sports car racing, because there's a lot of our guys that work in both, you know, the IMSA series and SRO, and by not having those conflicts, it helps all of sports car racing and motorsports as a whole thrive, because these mechanics can make a living. They're not having to decide between which 7 or 8 or 10 weekends a year are they going to commit to. It gives them the ability to commit to 14 or 15 or 16 weekends, which it's really important for the overall health of the sport, in my opinion.
That makes perfect sense. I love it. In a way, I keep trying to compare it to IMSA in, say, the 70s and the 80s. But the cars back then were, I won't say primitive, because they were beasts like anybody else's race cars. But once you're out there, you're out there. You're on your own, and you're trucking with your car and hoping everything stays together. And if it doesn't, how you go about risking your car and taking care of things and making sure you finish the race. You know? And that's where the stories come from.
Absolutely. Jack, you know, how were those wooden wheels back in the day?
I deserve that.
You know, they were the teams were great back in those days. You built your own race cars. And there were great race cars being built and mm-hmm. fast ones. And they were the good teams, the teams that, you know, the technology wasn't where it is today, but the cars were as fast, not as much driver aids for sure. But I was running 200 miles an hour in the 80s with, you know, without ABS, without traction control and stuff like that, and a really nice race car, very, very good race car. And that's the difference. I mean, it's now the manufacturers are involved a lot more. They were involved then, but they were involved then for more of a money. They would help you, pay, you
had
know,
support.
They would put money into the program, and now the manufacturers do it a little different. They put the money in by building the cars and offering, you know, track support, technical support, and stuff like that. It's a different kind of support. Cars are much safer now, much safer. Tracks are much safer. You know, the whole thing has evolved. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's still good. And it's still, I mean, the racing is, it's never been better. The racing is unbelievable. Like Kenton said, and Kevin, I mean, you win in any of these guys you've done, especially in GT4. I argue that the GT4 has the best racing. You just have to watch it, and you'll see easily that the GT4 is the most competitive series in America. Absolutely. So,
yeah, I'll be really curious to see what this next generation of racers brings. Just because, like, they're growing up with, you know, cars that, you know, are indestructible, and you're essentially cocooned in a very safe car, and like that's great, like it's good. You know, less people are getting hurt and things are much safer. But there's also like that lack of you know, self, like I'm trying to find the word for it. You know, they're not as worried about hurting themselves. So, you know, these kids coming up and karting, and yeah, skills are the same and whatnot. So like the amount of risk that might be coming in the future with the future generation, we'll see if racing gets different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the level of respect, I guess, that might be from car to car. I'd be curious, very curious to see what happens in the future with when the kids of karting then go into cars. Who knows? Maybe people are going to be adoring each other a little bit more in the future. We'll see. But
that comes back down to the coaches, you know. That comes back down to the coaches, Kenton, right? How do we instill respect in the kids to respect their competitors?
Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it? You know, it's
that's the jumping off.
I guess
that's
really tricky.
I need to do a station.
I mean, you're in that. Yeah, Kevin, you're in that position right now with a youngster that you're coaching and working with. Like, is how has that been? Is like just because he probably because he just jumped straight in an MX5 Cup, you know, and he doesn't have any pre-existing racing experience. It was probably relatively easy for you to groom him, I would assume. Is that right?
Are all pro drivers doing the same thing, or coaching and bringing up the AMs?
I would say to a degree, certainly. There's a lot of the pros that make the majority of their living, you know, coaching drivers, and it's how we can stay in seats and in more series by having the ability to co-drive, because the two-driver format, when you're coaching somebody, helps tremendously, because they now have an accurate measuring stick. So they have somebody to say, hey, the car is capable of this. They have data to look at. They have all of those things. So, you know, back to kind of Kenton's point about bringing drivers up, you know, from my standpoint, the kid that I'm working with, John, he doesn't have a lot of experience in those bad habits. So I think that certainly helps. But I think for us, you know, we've instilled into John the number one thing is, even if you have the ability to go faster, we're racing in our class. We are racing in the bronze class, the AM classification. If that car in front of you, even if you can pass him, if he's not in class, we have zero benefit. So, you know, growing up, I was mentored by Ernie Irvin and Darrell Waltrip and a couple other guys, and they constantly beat my head, risk versus reward, risk versus reward, risk versus reward. And, you know, Darrell was a guy that was very opinionated, and Ernie was a guy that would tell you, hey, I did everything wrong. I'll tell you what not to do more than I'll tell you what to do. But, you know, tremendous amount of talent, and they were constantly making me learn to process that risk versus reward, risk versus reward. And that's something that we've tried to instill in John is, if the guy in front of you is in the next class, it doesn't matter if you pass him. It's not worth putting yourself in a situation where you might be totally in the clear, but he might not see you and turn in on you entering a corner, or you make contact, which ruins our race and ultimately ruins the championship that we're running for. So, you know, the biggest thing we've tried to hammer into John is we have to finish, we have to finish, we have to finish, we have to finish. And, you know, it's one of the oldest things in racing, right? In order to finish first, you must first finish. And, you know, this year, knock on wood, I'm very fortunate to have a driver like John that listens, and he actually absorbs, and I feel more like I can tell him more what not to do than what to do. But, you know, we were very fortunate in the fact that we had 13 podiums out of 14 races, and our worst finish of the year was fourth, and it's because we were able to finish every race, and we won 9 of those 14. So, you know, John.
And you still
John
finished second
listened.
In point. Who beat you?
We won the,
oh, no, they won
the AM classification.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood then.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so we had a good year because, you know, John was able to finish all the races and listen and learn. And, you know, it was a huge learning year for us for sure.
Good grief. Okay. This is Race Talk with Trish. I'm doing a station identification here. I'm a little late. Produced by Dave Wallen and Racing History Product. All our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them forever on Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com, and also on the Internet Archive, archive.org. Okay, we're back. Who wants to tell me a story? Something funny. What's the craziest thing that ever happened to you during a race?
Oh, man.
That everybody knows about.
No, no one knows about it. So
they will know.
I had a coming together with, well, not me physically, it was actually over a course of two races, I guess, and the two races were pretty close to each other, so it was probably the closest thing to.
So you hit him twice.
Sorry. No. we were. It was our first race, and it was in a different class, not GT4. I don't want to be too specific, because I don't know who's listening. But this was at Watkins Glen, and the driver, I was actually the one in the car that my co-driver was finishing. And, you know, we're coming into one of the corners, and we were leading the race. Like we were looking pretty good. And we were actually on, like, it was probably the last 15 minutes of the race or so. And it was fourth to last corner on the track at Watkins Glen, and we get straight just moved out of the way. That driver comes up to the inside and then rubs us. Which is like, you know, it's all right. Like if you get nudged a little bit from behind on the way into the corner and whatnot, if your tires are wearing off, you know, we were struggling a little bit at the end, and we were trying to just defend our position. And the second place driver had some good speed. So, you know, he got to our rear bumper and he couldn't get by, so he decided to move us. And he got next to us, went next door to us, door to door, and then on the exit of the corner, completely, it tracks out to essentially a wall or grass with about two feet between the asphalt and the wall. And he tracked us all the way out to the grass and shoved us into the wall. Like destroyed the right side of our car, and we ended up not finishing the race. So the next time we got on the track, so he finished us off better than we, so we couldn't quite get back to him, unfortunately, on that race. But next race, we ended up in a similar position where, you know, I was finishing the race this time, and same guy's coming up on us, and he has some good speed, and it was two laps to go in the race. And he gets a better run off the final corner at Lime Rock and drives by me. Going in, down into turn one, I've got him lined up. And it was probably the first time I've ever, like, purposely flat-out moved someone out of the way. And, boy, it felt good. But unfortunately, he got back to me. He moved me out of the way again, and he ended up winning the race, unfortunately. But it was one of those things where I've never actually had to ever move someone out of the way, and in anger, was the last time I've ever had to do something like that, and last time I ever want to do something like that. But he gave us one, and I made sure to have to make him earn that win, and he sure as hell did. So it was an interesting two race weekend, that's for sure. But yeah, I can only imagine.
I have a feeling you're going to be seeing that again. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, but Kevin, I can only imagine the rivalry from week to week to week. Kevin, you raced in NASCAR the Cup Series, I can only imagine, like, going from week to week to week, like, just the amount of emotion from one week to the next, you know, how things can build up, I would assume, you know, because some guy might do something, you know, each week that builds up. I don't know if you have any situations where something built up to the point where you snap.
Oh man, there's a lot, but you know, there's a lot that goes on, and when I was fortunate enough to win the Rookie of the Year championship in the Cup Series in 2010, I remember my Rookie of the Year speech. I told Jimmy Johnson, I said, "Jimmy, congrats on your fifth consecutive championship." And I was like, you know, I learned a lot of things about Jimmy that year. And one of the things I learned is he's fluent in sign language as well as you know, being a great race car driver. But every time he passed, he'd flip you off. And Jimmy and I are great friends, and we've known each other for all the way back to racing in ASA together, and, you know, things like that. But, there's a lot of things that happen. You know, my first time running a Cup car at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, we were having a bad day, and we were running in the back, and Tony Stewart came up to lap me, and he straight up just dumped me. I mean, wrecked the heck out of me at 200 miles an hour, and you know, backed it in hard, and he needed a caution. I was it, and we're at the airport, you know, a couple hours after the race. We're at the airport afterwards. He comes up and puts me in a headlock, and in a friendly headlock, not a negative headlock, and comes up and says, "Hey, welcome to Cup, kid." And literally, he meant it. He's like, "I needed a caution, and I caught you, and you were it. And, you know, next time, don't put yourself in that position so I don't have to use you for a caution to help me." And it's those things where you're kind of like, man, I don't know how to take that. You know, I used to race for Tony and USAC, and then to have him come up and dump me was like, wow, that just happened. It's kind of interesting. But, the NASCAR deal is wild. You know, one of the – you talk about crazy stories. And back in the NASCAR West Series, when that was a little bit of a different car than what the West Series is now, we were racing at the California Speedway. And, you know, two-mile racetrack, very, very fast. And we were leading pretty much the entire race, and it's right at the very end, about six laps to go, caution came out, and I came on the radio and said, well, boys, we are fully screwed now, and they're like, what do you mean we're screwed? We're the fastest car on the track by a large margin. I said, well, the last 15 laps, I've been driving this thing on the kill switch, the throttle's stuck, so the return spring didn't come off. It's obviously back in the days of the carburetor, and throttle return springs had broke, and the throttle was hung wide open, so we had a kill switch on the steering wheel, so you go into the corner, hit the kill switch until you get the thing turned, and then just hit the power back on, and you know, I knew we'd have a trouble on a restart there, and we ended up falling back and finishing fifth, but yeah, that was one of those funny ones where everybody kind of laughs, and that earned me the name The Colonel, because everybody called me, started Kyle Busch started it with calling me KFC, Kevin Effing Conway, so started with a stuck
bottle
at Montana.
Love it.
Oh, my gosh.
That must have been tricky. Driving a light switch.
What's that? Yeah.
That must have been tricky driving with a light switch like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the more unique times in my career, for sure. It was when the rear end locks up, you know, you're about 100, mid-corner speed's about 155, 160, and just go back to full power instantly. It was exciting.
Not bad. Jeez.
Not recommended for beginners. I love it.
Yeah, not quite. That's for sure.
So, what's next? Let me think. I had all these wonderful things to ask you.
I'm in Aries, and I enjoy long walks on the beach.
I thought you might.
I do.
We try to keep it, it was a happy group, you know.
I'm down in Florida. I can enjoy those nice walks on the beach right now.
Right. Right. You won't even know it's winter.
Yeah,
we can wrap it up.
If you're ready.
Sure. We had an audience, a good audience. That's all right, yeah.
We did. I hope so. That's what we do. That's why people want to learn something here. And I certainly have learned. This has been an amazing evening. Well, I want to thank to each one of you for great stories, and Forza to our audience. I hope they're out there and enjoying this as much as I am. Thanks for listening in. Our next episode is Wednesday, December 15th, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The Renault Cup, IMSA's 1980 series that launched a bunch of successful drivers. Those little cars were like Easter eggs. They would roll over like anything. Do y'all have any cars that will roll over like a like a Renault would?
I doubt it.
No, I hope you don't. Well, the closest thing to it right now, I guess, would be Minis. But blindingly fast, amazingly so. This is just very surprising. Anyway, so stay tuned for the Renault Cup. Folks, thanks so much. I hope you have a pleasant evening, and I hope to see you on TV, or if you ever come to Road Atlanta, or heck, I might even come out to the Ozarks. You never know. But I do hope you'll keep in touch.
Thank you for having us.
It's been nice. It's been a lot of nice. So this has been Race Talk with Trish, produced by Dave Wollin and the Racing History Project. Why can I say that tonight? Good evening, everyone. Thank you.